Hands it off. Left circle. McNabb. Dorofeev. One-timer. Blocked. Rattles around. Score!
Nobody is ever satisfied with one. So we're back for a second hour of the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show.
Michael takes it on his backhand. Forehand pass. Hanifin. Score! Noah Hanifin powered
the goal. From the Finley Chevrolet Fox Sports Las Vegas studio and live at lvsportsnetwork.com, here is Darren Millard and Ryan Wallace.
Hour number two of the VGK Insider Show rolling along here on a Tuesday. And the VGK Insider Show is brought to you by the Dollar Loan Center, where you get your first loan on us. Apply for free at don'tbebroke.com to get up to $5,000. That's right. Hour number two. Hockey is just around the corner. I'm kidding. It's going to be still 5 days until the Stanley Cup Final opens up on Saturday between the Edmonton Oilers and the Florida Panthers. But Chapman, for hour two, what are we going to do?
Sticks down, drop the puck?
Yeah. Why do you say it like you're inquisitive?
Well, because I wasn't sure if you wanted me to say that or if you wanted me to mention that we have a guest on the line.
No. I didn't want you to do that. It's a bit now for sticks down, drop the puck. Yeah. We're going to do it every single time we open up hour number two.
We're only halfway through the game before we do it, though.
Yeah, even though we're halfway through the game, even though we didn't start on time, that's a hockey cliche, and we are guilty of committing that terrible sin in the sport. But that being said, you are right, Chapman. We do have a guest right now, Shang Peng, San Jose Hockey Now. He joins us, and the reason I reached out to Shang is certainly part of his connection to Joe Pavelski, and there was some news from Joe Pavelski. But first, Shang, how's summer treating you, buddy?
Pretty good. I am in San Jose right now, and it's 90 degrees. So it's actually very much like being in Vegas.
Do you not do well with heat? Like, do you hate the heat? Is that your least favorite?
Yeah, that's why I moved out of Vegas. No, it just so happens it's unusually hot today. I know there's a heat wave, but of course the big news in San Jose is they're going to get the number one pick, and so change of fortunes there. So maybe see the Vegas Golden Knights top of the division. I don't know, maybe in 5 years.
You know, that's an interesting one. We're going to talk about the draft. We're going to talk about what we expect the San Jose Sharks are going to do with that number one overall pick. But I do want to spend a little bit of time on Joe Pavelski. Earlier today, Pavelski, locker cleanout, said that his intention is to not play next season. Nothing's official yet. He hasn't officially retired. But, you know, you've covered Pavelski in the past. When you look at kind of his career and what he's been able to accomplish, like, what stands out most to you about Joe Pavelski, the hockey player, but also Joe Pavelski, the man?
I think on both accounts, both the hockey player and the man, he is the ultimate kind of underdog story. Think about this guy, the 205th pick of the 2003 draft, seventh round, slow, right? Not the biggest guy. Not a guy that you look at first glance and think, oh, this guy is going to be, have the kind of career that he had. And he ended up with the most goals and the most points for that 2003 draft class, a very loaded 2003 draft class, I might say, too. And so here's a guy that just worked his way from sort of the bottom and got his way to a fringe kind of Hall of Fame career. And so, again, we're talking about sort of the ultimate underdog story. So kind of good story, kind of the guy, kind of the man that you, if you have any kids, you tell them this is the guy that you want to be like. Of course, the stories are legendary, famous of him every morning before practice, before everybody else got on the ice, practicing tips, getting Brent Burns to shoot the puck at him so he can tip the puck in, things like that, right? So this is sort of the motto that whether you have the talent of a number one pick or the talent of a 205th pick, that this is the guy whose work ethic you want to emulate.
You know, you wrote a piece earlier today about Pavelski, and you likened him to Captain America. Like, I know that's been a nickname of Pavelski in the past, but that's a perfect metaphor for what he is. He's not the most gifted guy, but through his ability to just persevere and work hard, he became a legend, not just in San Jose, but also in Dallas.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, that he did in two places is doubly impressive. You know, the second act of his career, as much as it hurt Sharks fans to let him go, in a lot of ways is every bit as impressive as what he did in San Jose, because he did it in his mid-30s. He did it, you know, his first season in Dallas was actually pretty rough. If you look at the number, he scored just 17 goals that year. I'm sure people were talking about, oh, what a terrible signing by Dallas. And he rebounded, and he was a big part of their playoff run 2020, final run 2023 last year, Western Conference finals. Sputtered a bit this year. But, yeah, his second act is every bit as impressive, I think, as what he did in San Jose. So, yeah, very much Captain America, except for, of course, the Super Soldier Serum. His Super Soldier Serum was his work ethic.
I'm trying to think of a way to word this question so it's not a simple yes answer, but it's my opinion that Joe Pavelski is the greatest player who's ever put on the teal for the San Jose Sharks. Is there any other player who could make an argument that he's not?
Well, I think definitely Joe Thornton and Patrick Marleau. Joe Thornton won the only MVP in a Hart Trophy as a Shark in Sharks history. Patrick Marleau, Mr. Shark, played so many games with the Sharks, never got hurt, obviously. Could always count on him every night. But those are the two guys that stand out. But Joe is very much has an argument right there. I think in a lot of ways, actually, his loss when he left the Sharks as a free agent in 2019, when the Sharks sort of wouldn't match Dallas, they couldn't. They didn't have the cap space to match Dallas's offer. But what's happened in San Jose since he left, obviously, 5 years out of the playoffs, not saying that's entirely because of Pavelski, but that's something that definitely, as much as Thornton and Marleau have racked up the points, the counting stats, that Thornton and Marleau can't say that sort of effect that he had when they left is nothing like what happened when Pavelski left.
Sheng Peng, San Jose Hockey Now, joining us here as we dive a little bit into Joe Pavelski, his career. Obviously, the news earlier today, nothing official yet, but that Joe Pavelski doesn't intend to play next season. We'll keep an eye on whether or not there is an official announcement at any point in time in the next couple of weeks or so. Now, you kind of touched on it, but the San Jose Sharks, I don't want to say that they've been in disarray, but it's hard to argue that that's not the case. Ever since Joe Pavelski left the organization as a free agent, do you kind of view that as, you know, maybe, I mean, obviously it's a turning point of sorts, but why was that one of the big mistakes for San Jose, letting Joe Pavelski go? Like, is this a scenario where it set them back so far and you just weren't really prepared for all of the things that he does and everything that he brought to the table behind the scenes, not just on the ice?
Well, first of all, the word disarray, you're actually being too kind, so thank you for that. Last 5 years in San Jose have been very, very rough, so I would say beyond a orderly disarray. But definitely, it's one of those things. I don't want to put it all on Joe Pavelski. If Joe Pavelski had stayed, it's not like he was going to bring a 47-point Sharks team this year any closer to the playoffs, right? No one is that good. But I would say that a lot of what he represented, I'm not sure how much he himself could have kept pushing it forward, just the culture and all that stuff that he represented. But that stuff was lost when he was gone. There was no doubt about that. That has been lost over the years. And that was a great mistake in the sense of the calculation that they made. And you look back and you understand what Doug Wilson was thinking in terms of, actually, people forget that the year before he became a free agent, Joe Pavelski, 2017-18, he had a bit of a rough year, actually. And there were whispers that, okay, is this it for Joe? Is he slowing down? And so that's when Doug made the calculation that I'm going to spend that money that they couldn't give to Joe a year later. They gave it to Evander Kane for much better and probably a lot worse. But Evander was a lot younger, and so you can kind of understand the calculation there. Of course, a year later, Erik Karlsson comes on board, and the idea, of course, Erik Karlsson is that you're getting a world-class Norris Trophy player, and that's a guy that's going to take you to the next step, get that Stanley Cup for Joe Thornton, who was still around, but obviously that didn't happen. And so I don't want to lay it just, I think that it's easy to look at the narrative and just say it's all Pavelski, and I don't think it was. But nonetheless, though, it was a major loss to lose a guy, not just like we mentioned, not just the on the ice impact, but the off the ice impact.
Shang, I only had a couple of interactions with Joe Pavelski, one of them at an All-Star game and a couple of other when the Sharks were here for regular season games. But take us into the locker room. What was Pavelski like on a day-to-day basis in the locker room?
I think he was a guy that you could count on. You can count on to show the younger guys exactly how it's done, to be the first guy on the ice. Like I mentioned, those stories of him getting in front of the net and taking shots from Brent Burns, that's something that everybody learns from, right? Even the other veterans on the team, they see that too. The rookies see that, the veterans see that. And so I think that Joe was, in my experience, a guy that was always accountable, never shied away from talking to us. He did his job there. And always responsible, like I said, first guy on the ice. And that's so important when you're trying to set to continue a winning culture as the Sharks were trying to do for so long.
All right, Shang, I've got two more questions for you on Pavelski, then we'll pivot to a couple of other topics. Do you expect that number 8 will hang from the rafters in San Jose?
I think so. The Sharks have been pretty tough with their measurement or their scale of it. Right now, last year or 2 years ago was Patrick Marleau. That was their first retirement. And Joe Thornton will go up next year. And so they've been pretty tough about that. Guys like, say, Evgeny Nabokov, another Sharks legend, still hasn't had his jersey to the rafters. But I think, though, Joe is so beloved that I would say yes.
Okay, and here's, you know, a really easy one to answer with, like, little to no nuance, I'm sure. You mentioned fringe NHL Hall of Fame career. Do you believe Joe Pavelski gets into the Hall of Fame?
I think this will be unpopular. I think he will be a little bit short, though.
Yeah. Yeah. Is there any argument that you can make right now as to why he should? Because I like Joe Pavelski. I'd love to see him in, but it's like, it's borderline at best, right?
Yeah, I think one of his better arguments is his playoff track record until this season. His playoff track record until this season was is very, very impressive. Look at the number of goals that he scored. I think he ends up in the top three, I believe, or top three or five of a playoff. I'm not sure about that stat. I know he's very high up there, and that's very high up for obviously a guy that didn't end up winning Stanley Cup. But also, that's another part of it where I think that fans can point at, if you want to be very, very tough on guys like Joe Thornton and Patrick Marleau for coming up short sometimes in the playoffs. I don't think you can really ever say that about Pavelski until this year. But of course, this year he's 39, so you can give him a little bit of a pass on it. But up to this year, though, he was thought of as a clutch player, and I think he lived up to that in every way.
Okay, so Shang, I want to shift gears and ask you about Peter DeBoer. And I don't know, maybe this is a little bit out of left field, but hey, it is what it is. You've covered Pete quite a bit in terms of your career. Mm-hmm. It's 5 out of the last 6 conference finals for Pete, and in every instance, he has lost in the conference final in 6 games or less. Do you have a reason as to why this continues to happen to Pete? Because I look at the Dallas Stars and the Edmonton Oilers, I look at that matchup, that's not a series the Dallas Stars should have lost.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I have a theory on that. I think it's just one of those things where you get there and sometimes things don't work out. Like, I know their power play sputtered a little bit. You have Joe Pavelski struggling a little bit there. You outshoot the Edmonton Oilers 35-10 in a game 6. You'll take that any day. And yeah. the fact you don't come out with a win, that's very highly, highly improbable. You don't come out with a win, of course, right? And, of course, in that game, you have Connor McDavid doing something ridiculous that nobody could stop. And so it's one of those things where I think Pete is a very, very good coach. I don't know if there's anything that I would point to as this is a reason why he can't get over the top. More than just if he just keeps getting there, that he will win one day.
Yeah, I'm with you there. It's Pete's a great coach, and we really felt like this was going to be the year for him. And of course, they fall a little bit short. Okay, let's talk San Jose Sharks. Everyone in Vegas, their favorite topic. You mentioned the draft. It's coming up at the end of June here in Las Vegas at the Sphere, the 28th and the 29th. Obviously, the San Jose Sharks have the first overall pick. The expectation is that they're going to take Macklin Celebrini. Is there any world where the San Jose Sharks do not select Macklin Celebrini first overall?
No.
All right. So give us an idea of who Macklin Celebrini is.
Macklin Celebrini, if he lives up to the hype, and it's incredible hype, really, is Jonathan Toews, but with more skill. And so if you think about that, if you have a guy that not only does he have a 90-point skill, maybe something like that, right, but he is going to be a Selke candidate, and that's a guy that you build your entire franchise around. That's a guy who wins Stanley Cups, right? Jonathan Toews won three of them. And so you have a guy like that, that really helps the Sharks rebuild. It really puts everything kind of together. Before they won a draft lottery, it seemed like it was couldn't really quite picture this Shark, their prospects, their pool of prospects, putting it together to be a contender, because they were missing, at least on the surface, they were missing that kind of number one player that you often need to win the Stanley Cup. And if Celebrini lives up to the hype, he is that number one player. And the thing that is most impressive when I talk with people is, like I mentioned, those Toews comparisons. It's not a points thing, because we know that Jonathan Toews was not a big-time scorer, right, like a Nathan MacKinnon or a Connor McDavid or that sort of thing, right? But what did Jonathan Toews do? He played two ways from the get-go, from when he was 19, when he made his NHL debut, and he won. He won three Stanley Cups. He was a winner. And so the get that comparison, but maybe with a little bit more even skill than Jonathan Toews, that is a number one player. That is your Toews, Kopitar, Bergeron, a guy that if he stays healthy and he lives up to the billing, is a guy who can be a number one player on a Stanley Cup winning team. And that kind of helps put everything in place for the Sharks. Now you have Will Smith coming up, very good prospect, maybe ideally on a great team, a number two player. And guys like William Eklund, good prospects like that, they can fall into kind of lower roles than being the sort of the face of the franchise. Celebrini maybe can be that face of the franchise to really turn things around for the Sharks.
All right, so you mentioned Will Smith, who just signed his entry-level contract. You've got Macklin Celebrini on the horizon. With that knowledge kind of moving forward, how quickly can the Sharks turn this around?
Well, Toews and Kane, they won a Stanley Cup in their third year. So I'm not expecting that. I'm not putting that on Celebrini and Smith. But the bar is very high in that kind of sense. Sidney Crosby, he won his first Stanley Cup in his fourth year. And that's coming from his first year with the Penguins. They were awful. And so there is a precedence for kind of turning it around quick. But I will say, though, that the Sharks don't have sort of the other foundational pieces that the Blackhawks and the Penguins had, using those examples. The Blackhawks obviously had Keith, Seabrook, Jarmuson, a lot of kind of support, elite support players. Obviously, Keith was an elite player in his own right, Norris Trophy winner. And the Sharks are missing that in terms of in their defensive prospect pool. They are missing kind of a surefire number one defenseman. And so we talk about years, maybe it won't be as advanced as Chicago, as Pittsburgh, but if my career is smart, well, you've got your number one and possibly two pieces down, and those are sort of your hardest things, right? Next thing you do is you got to reshape your defense. So if you can start to do that, then maybe we're talking 5 years, maybe four, maybe even making the playoffs. Could be sooner if Smith and Celebrini are as good as advertised.
Boy, you mentioned Kane and Taves winning in their third year, Sidney Crosby winning in his fourth year. Connor McDavid took him 9 seasons to get to the Stanley Cup final. What a slacker that McDavid guy is.
It wasn't his fault, though.
Yeah, you have a thought on the Stanley Cup final? Who do you think is going to win between Florida and Edmonton?
I like Florida, but I'm always wrong, though. I picked Dallas to win the Cup this year, so what do I know?
Are you going to be in Vegas for the draft? I assume you will.
I will be. I will be.
All right, great. So you and I, we're going to get together. We're gonna hang out at the draft. We're going to go eat some awesome food here in Vegas. We're going to catch up. I'm looking forward to it, Chang. I'm looking forward to hanging out with you when you are here later on this month.
Sounds good. I'll see you guys over there.
All right, great stuff. That is Chang Peng, San Jose Hockey Now. Just a great guy. Honestly, like, I love Chang. I love bringing Chang on to the show. He is, how do I put this? He is incredibly honest.
Yes.
Like, I was trying to be kind, right? I was trying to be kind to the San Jose Sharks. Disarray, I feel like that's a pretty strong word. And Chang's like, no, it's not disarray. Like, it has been an absolute tire fire. So, like, I love Chang because of his honesty. It was great to get some insights on Joe Pavelski. If it is a career for Pavelski, if he does hang them up, just getting those insights are big. It's important. And, you know, we're talking about the draft in just a couple of weeks here. Like, once the Stanley Cup Final's over, everything is going to go incredibly quickly. You've got the NHL awards, and then you've got the draft. Macklin Celebrini factors in to be the number one overall pick to San Jose. So it's not a bad idea to just get a little bit of intel on the new guy in San Jose.
Yeah, it was pretty funny when he asked him, is there any way that they don't take Macklin Celebrini? And he's just like, nope.
Yeah. Well, it seems like that's the guy.
Yes.
Right?
Come on. I mean, I can't imagine that they go a different direction. He's been the consensus number one for a while now. And I think if you're San Jose, your goal is to get back to the playoffs as soon as possible. And in a division that, you know, for all the stuff that people talk about the Pacific Division, they've sent two straight teams to a Stanley Cup final and two different teams. So it's a tough division. Like, yeah, you've got the Sharks in this division who quite honestly aren't very good. But I mean, Seattle was in the playoffs last year. They took a step back. Calgary, they were in it until they decided to sell. I mean, Edmonton, obviously, LA is good. I mean, it's a tough division, you know, and getting back to the playoffs is not easy. But I think if you're San Jose, you're kind of building for things to peak when other teams in the division start to slide back to the median a little bit. And so hopefully if you're one of those people who's stuck in a 90-degree day in San Jose, you're thinking, all right, maybe 3-4 years from now, we're in a position where we're the Edmonton Oilers or the Golden Knights, you know. That sounds awful. 90 degrees in the Bay Area. No, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, I love how Chang comes on and immediately complains that it's too hot, but we all understand the humidity.
Yes.
And it's like, okay, 90 degrees there is way
worse than
90
degrees
here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, speaking of, the pool in my apartment complex is broken. I'm pretty broken up over that because, like, we're getting to already the hottest days of the year, and it's like I wanted to go for a swim this morning before I came in for the show, and I go out and the pool's closed. What? How could the pool be closed?
What are they doing?
They're changing out the filter, so they're telling me tomorrow it'll be up and running. I'm like, listen, if the pool's cleaner.
It's one day.
I'm willing to sacrifice one day if it means the pool's cleaner.
Well, you should be willing to do that. Yes.
I'm a reasonable person.
It's not down for like 3 months.
Well,
you're not going to lose the pool for the summer.
Our hot tub has been out for 3 weeks already. So I do enjoy the hot tub late at night. Sure. I like to go
sit in it. Who cares about the hot tub? It's the summer.
I care about it. I like to go out there with a couple beers, and I'll sit in the hot tub and drink a beer or two before I go to bed, relax, unwind.
Fat Tire?
No. No. Cronenberg, 1664.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I'm down. You know what? The funny thing is, everyone...
You're not taking a Coors Light out there?
No. Maybe a Dos Equis or a Pacifico. But, yeah, I'm I like Mexican beer, or I like my Cronenberg.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Good stuff there. Thanks so much to Shang Pang for jumping on here. Talking a little Joe Pavelski. He didn't have a theory on Pete DeBoer, but I do. That's coming up next. One-timers. That's what you got to look forward to on the VGK Insider Show.
Carlson left corner, centered, one-timer, score!
It's time for One-Timers. One-timers. A quick look at news and notes from around the National Hockey League. Brought to you by Paul Padilaw. It's not about the injury, it's about the recovery.
One-timers, news and notes from around the National Hockey League. Chris Chapman, I don't understand... I mean, I do understand why the Buffalo Bills are the brunt of everybody's joke when it comes to experience and how much experience matters in championship rounds or a championship series or a championship setting. But I didn't expect the soundbite so far of the Stanley Cup final to come from Oilers head coach Chris Knobloch. We all know, famously, the Buffalo Bills went to four consecutive Super Bowls, 91, 92, 93, 94, and lost all four of them.
Yikes.
And so when Chris Knobloch was asked earlier today about how much the experience matters for the Florida Panthers, given that they are in their second consecutive Stanley Cup final, Knobloch said, deadpan, straight face, maybe ask the Buffalo Bills what experience in the Super Bowl means. Oh. I didn't know he had it in him. I didn't know he was going to choose violence in that moment against a city that has nothing to do with the Florida Panthers. But hey, Chris Knobloch, you gave us the funniest joke, and I can't even laugh at it. It's not fair. It sucks. I'm contractually obligated to not find that joke funny.
Yeah, I was,
and it's
say,
the worst thing because it's really funny.
I think Mrs. Wallace would probably have you sleeping on the couch if you laughed at that joke at the expense of her Buffalo Bills. Obviously, yep. some Western New York connections to the Wallace family, but I mean, listen, I'm a Jets fan, so I can make fun of the Bills for losing four straight Super Bowls, but I won't because I also don't want to be on the bad side of Mrs. Wallace. So. Do better, Chris Knobloch. I'll say that.
There's at least one person in this household that is not going to be rooting for the Edmonton Oilers, and that is assuredly Mrs. Wallace. Okay, I've promised this for a couple of days. I wanted to do a deep dive on Pete DeBoer, and five out of the last six conference finals for Pete, one with San Jose, two with Vegas, two with Dallas, all five of them have ended with a Pete DeBoer loss in six games or less. And so, like, you know, I felt really bad for Pete in that post-game press conference because you look at the words, you look at the phrasing, you look at the body language. Like, we've all seen that before. We saw it for 2 years in a row here in Vegas. Pete has great teams. And somehow, some way, that one extra play that you need to make, that one extra save that you need to find, that one opportunity on special teams that you either need to kill or you need to find a way to score, it just hasn't gone his way. And it's got to be frustrating. I understand it's frustrating. He used the word gutted, and I can't argue against that. You look at that game six, there's no reason why the Dallas Stars should have lost that game. They were the better team in every facet outside of goaltending and special teams. And that's really the thing that I want to hone in on here. Pete is a great coach. I, like Shang Pang, do believe that Pete will win a Stanley Cup some point at some time. I just think he's too good of a coach not to win at all. Now, that being said, special teams in the conference final for Pete DeBoer teams over the last five postseasons that he's been a part of have been the issue. That's been the story for Pete DeBoer. The Stars went 0-14 in the conference final against the Edmonton Oilers. And I said that I felt right that the Oilers would find success on the power play early. Dallas would figure them out, and the goals would be harder to come by, and that would allow the Dallas Stars to gain some traction on their power play. It never happened. It never happened. And I mentioned this being a trend. When you look at the last five conference final championship rounds that Pete has been a part of, San Jose, Vegas, Dallas, those teams went a combined 8-75 on the power play.
Ugh.
Listen, I'm not sitting here saying that your power play needs to win you games. I don't believe that that's the case, right? Like, I think that you've got to be really good 5-on-5, and you've got to saw off in terms of power play when it comes to a team like the Edmonton Oilers. You knew the Oilers were going to figure something out. They scored 4 power play goals over the final 2 games of that series, where the Dallas Stars, their power play actively lost the momentum. And again, I'm not sitting here saying that the power play has to win you a series, but it's got to break even if you are the better team 5-on-5, and that is predominantly what we have seen in the Pete DeBoer coach teams. They have been better than their opposition 5-on-5. It is special teams that have let them down. And so when you're in that scenario, it's back to the drawing board. It's back to figuring out how you can make a difference with the man advantage, how you can make a difference with the penalty kill, because I'm not putting it all on the power play. It's all special teams, power play, penalty kill combined. If Pete was able to figure that out, he'd have at least one Stanley Cup over that span. It's just simple. It's been an inability to solve special teams play that has cost Pete DeBoer a chance at a Stanley Cup.
Well, and a lot of similarities between this season, the way it ended for the Dallas Stars, and the way it ended for the Golden Knights in the bubble, and then the year after the bubble. I mean, you look back at the Montreal series, and Carey Price was not that great. Like, he didn't do anything spectacular. Golden Knights just couldn't score. You look at the series against Dallas, and maybe you're like, all right, the Vancouver series took a lot out of them, but they weren't scoring on Thatcher Demko at a high rate in that series against Vancouver. And then they get shut down by a guy who I don't even know where he's playing anymore. So I think there's a lot of similarities. You know, early in his career, he gets to a cup final with New Jersey. They clearly were not the better team. These last few years, you're like, you know what? They're losing to teams that they're better than. Last year, different situation. The Golden Knights were not going to be denied by anybody last year. But the Montreal series, the year that he lost to Dallas, this year, maybe you could even make the case the year that San Jose lost to St. Louis. I mean, I think St. Louis found some magic. And they weren't going to be denied either. But, I mean, on paper, the Sharks were probably every bit as good as the St. Louis Blues the year that they won the Stanley Cup. So
they're the better team. They're the better team.
It's frustrating because I really like Pete. I want to see him reach the pinnacle. But I also really like Lindy Ruff. And he's a guy who's come close. And it doesn't look like Lindy is going to win the Stanley Cup. I don't want to see Pete go down the same road as Lindy, where you look back, you're like, you know what, this guy's an incredible coach. He had a great career, but he just couldn't win the one that defined his career. I'm with you and Shang. I think at some point he will get there. I just think he's too good of a coach not to. And he always seems to find ways to coach really good teams, because that's what happens when you're a really good coach. Really good teams want to hire you when they have a vacancy. So I'm rooting for Pete. I want to see him get there. I want to see him get back and win one. And, you know, hopefully we never have to have this conversation again in regards to Pete. Maybe next year they break through and you know, he's got a bunch of guys who are going to be a couple years older. And, you know, maybe Ottinger plays better for him in that pinnacle series, and mm-hmm. we're having a different conversation next year. Obviously not at the expense of the Golden Knights, though.
Yeah. One of my favorite stats. Jeez. Corey Perry is 3-0 against Pete DeBoer in the Stanley Cup. I'm sorry, in the Western Conference Final.
Oh.
Beat him with Dallas. Beat him with Montreal. And beat him here with the Edmonton Oilers. Like, Corey Perry, it's pretty wild. Like, Stanley Cup Final, Stanley Cup Final, Stanley Cup Final. Didn't go to the Stanley Cup Final, Stanley Cup Final. Like, anytime this guy's in the playoffs, he's going to the Stanley Cup Final. It's wild.
Yeah.
Just wild. Okay. This one is right up your alley, Chapman. Devils general manager Tom Fitzgerald is open to trading the 10th overall pick, first round pick for the New Jersey Devils, 10th overall. He said that if there's a deal that helps the team now and in the future, he will listen. But he told teams that he's open, but only if it's something significant. Fitzgerald noted that they are in the goalie market. However, they would also like to add up front. They want forwards. They want defensemen. They want essentially someone at every position moving forward in New Jersey. So I guess the question is, like, we know that the Devils were sniffing around Jacob Markstrom. That didn't end up happening during the season. If it did, New Jersey probably makes the playoffs, and we're not looking at it as a major, major setback for the Devils. But, like, does the 10th overall pick get you Jacob Markstrom? Does it get you a forward that can really push you in the right direction? Does it get you a defenseman that can shore up your blue line? Like, I don't know.
First of all, if they give up the 10th overall pick for Jacob Markstrom, I'll help Fitzgerald pack his bags, because that would be an absolutely ludicrous trade for a 34-year-old Jacob Markstrom who's had some injury questions the last couple of seasons. You absolutely
not. That's fine. That's
now,
fine.
Now, if
what,
you tell
what
me...
About, hold on. What about Linus Ullmark?
That's... it's still really high. I think you got to get something else, including Ullmark. You make it work where you send something to Boston and that 10th pick, and you get Ullmark mm-hmm. and a forward in return. We could have that conversation. The only goalie that I think you give up that number, that 10th overall pick for, is Connor Hellebuck, and he's not going anywhere.
You wouldn't do it for John Gibson?
No. Oh, no. I think Gibson's broken. Like, I legitimately think John Gibson has been broken by the Anaheim Ducks. Like, I don't think all the Kings horses and all the Kings men are putting John Gibson back together again.
Ah, come on. He's not Humpty Dumpty. He's just a guy that's been playing on a really bad team for a long, long time.
But he
can get it back.
It's not worth that gamble. It's not worth giving up the 10th pick for that gamble.
So is there any goalie that you want for the New Jersey Devils?
Or no? I would like Ullmark. I think Ullmark's a really good goalie. I don't know if I would give up the 10th overall, the 10th pick for him, though.
That's the problem, though. Like, if you're trying to get Linus Ullmark, you've got to send a player back the other way. Like, the Boston Bruins need this to be a hockey trade.
Right.
And not a futures trade.
Right.
Like, the Bruins cannot trade Linus Ullmark for a first-round pick. Even if it's top 10, they just can't do it. They need a player that can help them right now.
Yeah, and so do the Devils. Like, that's the thing. Like, I think... You get that goalie, and I don't know who Boston would be willing to trade. And like if you're the Bruins, maybe you tell the Devils we want one of these hot young players who've come up through your system the last couple of years. I mean, obviously you're not going to move Nico Hischier. You know, you're not moving Jack Hughes. Like, it's not going to be like a blockbuster trade like that. But I'll be curious to see. I mean, if they could swing a deal where they're able to get I don't even need an elite goalie. I just need a good goalie. And if you can get a good player who gives you top 6 minutes, mm-hmm. I think that's where you look. Like, you don't Ullmark would be nice, but I don't necessarily think you need someone as good as Ullmark. Like, you just need someone to win you games and not, because the Devils are going to find ways to outscore teams.
They've also got Jake Allen, and good friend of the show, Jake Allen. He's going to solidify things. If you're looking at a tandem, do you really need Linus Ullmark to kind of flesh that tandem out?
Well, does Ullmark even want to play? So. You know, he's been in the tandem for the last couple of years. Doesn't I would imagine he wants to stand on his own and be his own guy.
Well, yeah, but I mean, like, he would win that job. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
he would beat out.
It would be a tandem, but he would beat out Jake Allen.
He's probably getting 60-65% of the starts. 70%.
Yeah, but do you want to spend $5 million? Do you want to spend $5 million on a goaltender when you've already got Jake Allen in the fold? Like,
no,
I don't know.
You don't need to.
You know what I mean? Especially when you have holes in other assets. So,
right.
That'll be interesting to kind of keep an eye on. But the 10th overall pick is in play for the right deal from the New Jersey Devils. Those are your one-timers for today, Tuesday, June 4th. We're back with Catching Up with Chapman next.
When the guy wouldn't stop talking, we had no choice but to give him his own segment. It's time for Catching Up with Chapman.
Well, Ryan, I had my dates wrong. I kept thinking that today was the last episode of Pat Sajak hosting Wheel of Fortune. Turns out it's the 7th. So it's going to be Friday. But I had prepared this Catching Up with Chapman, and turns out that it would have been better off on Friday because that's actually the last day that Pat Sajak will be hosting it. But I was going through my Mount Rushmore of video or of game show hosts. I don't know if Sajak makes the cut. Like, he's good.
Wow.
He's good. But when I think of the all-time great game show hosts, I think of Gene Rayburn, who was a classic guy, and that's a little before both of our times. But like, I used to watch the old Game Show Network, and I'd watch Match Game, and Gene Rayburn was a hysterical, funny guy. I also look at Richard Dawson when he hosted Family Feud, like funny.
Sure.
He made an appearance in the movie The Running Man as a sleazy game show host. And then I start to wonder, I put Bob Barker on there. Right? Just timeless, timeless. And then I go Alex Trebek, the greatest video game, or video, I don't know why I keep saying video game, but I think the GOAT when it comes to video or game show hosts, you got to have Trebek on there. You know, like immortalized in the SNL skit. And I should pull it out. He actually narrated the NHL highlights the last time the Leafs won the Stanley Cup. He was doing the highlight package for, I'm guessing, some Canadian broadcast company. And there's Trebek talking about the Maple Leafs winning the Stanley Cup in 1967. And it's hard to imagine that that's the last time that they won the Cup. But Trebek's got to be on there.
Yeah, Trebek's the GOAT. Bob Barker's a close second. And I don't care about anybody else.
Yeah. Now,
like, to be perfectly honest, like Bob Barker, absolute legend. Alex Trebek, amazing. Amazing for a number of reasons.
Yes.
The wit, the sharpness to his comebacks, like, it was amazing. He was amazing.
Yeah. Now, are you old enough to remember Wheel of Fortune when they had where you would actually go through and buy prizes with the money?
No.
Oh.
No, thankfully, I'm not that old.
Good times.
All right, we'll catch y'all tomorrow. Same time, same place.